Come on, then.
Knights and knaves, from Camelot to Concord.
All right, we'll call it a draw.
Welcome to the Warriors Roundtable. On 95.7, the game.
On the right wing, in and out dribble, between the legs, offer step, wide open, left wing, three, Gucci!
Behold, King Kevin Danner.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, I very nice.
And the Saint, Gary St. Jean.
What up, what up, what up? We welcome you to Warriors Roundtable here on 95.7 The Game, reminding you that the 2025 playoffs are presented by Kaiser Permanente. Kevin Dana alongside Gary St. Jean, taking your calls all hour long. 888-957-9570, the number again, 888-957-9570. And a lot to get to from a game four to remember. Insane. I was thinking about this as I was making my way out of Chase Center last night. I think to me, and you've seen a lot more basketball in person than I have, Saint, but as far as games I have been to physically where you can kind of feel the atmosphere and feel the intensity of the game with the physicality and the drama and everything involved last night, that was the most intense non-elimination first-round game I've ever been to. I know I put a lot of kind of qualifiers on that, but man, what a game last night.
Absolutely fantastic. Now, it takes me back to the 80s when we used to play Boston and Philadelphia in the playoffs with Bird and Julius Erving and that crew. And I just got to give a lot of credit to both teams, the players, coaches, a great strategy taking place during the game. I thought, by and large, the refs did a heck of a job. And, boy, what a game to watch. Now up 3-1. This is – and I got to share with you, Kev, we've had a lot of these kind of games within the playoffs of the first round in the league. The ratings are way, way up. People are loving this.
Yeah, I mean, just look to another Western Conference series where the team with the lower seed – won both games at home, won game one and up 3-1, the Timberwolves against the Lakers. That game four was out of this world, too. But let's start with the last play of game four Monday night in Chase with Draymond's stop on Shane Goodall. Technically, there was a Fred VanVleet air ball three at the buzzer, but really the last significant defensive play for Golden State. I mean, first off, Draymond, let's start here. He made Şengün shoot it from like 13 feet away on a move where Şengün had routinely gotten to like 6 to 8 feet from the basket all game long.
There's an expression that coaches use. Do your work early. That means body him out away from the basket and get him out of his comfort zone, and then he's going to have a tougher attempt. Now, at that point, against Draymond, Şengün was 3 for 12. And he wound up 12 for 28 for the game. And Udoka, he called the right play action because that was his guy. I don't think VanVleet was going to get something there because the Warriors could have really got up in his grill. And the other guy might have been Thompson, and he's too young. So why did he go to Şengün where he went to him? On the court, Kev, you and I have talked about this many a night, there's a nail right in the middle of the free throw line. Between the elbow and elbow, there's a nail that perfectly aligns with the hoop. All game long, that's where they got him the ball, because that's probably the most difficult place for a team to double team. Unless you're live off of somebody that can't make a shot, you're in a help position, but you're in a position where you can get back out to a shooter. So maybe if the Warriors wanted to, we use the expression, put a foot in the paint, the other four guys, almost formulating a box and trying to stunt or, you know, slow him down. But great job by Draymond, and it was the right play, and sometimes the defense wins.
Yeah, I saw some people saying online that the Rockets tried to get a switch there to get Draymond off him and to get Payton off. It didn't look like they tried really hard to get Draymond off Şengün.
How you do that, you have one of your guards go down and screen, and then you see if they switch. Then the Warrior guard would wind up on Şengün up top. But at that point in the game, you're not going to switch that because then there's too much of a height discrepancy. So it may have happened, but my eye wasn't that sharp.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the numbers. Shane Goon, he dominated when Draymond was on the bench with five fouls. It was like 17 points in 12 minutes and 15 seconds. Marcus Thompson did the math. And at 9 of 16 for 25 points. But against Draymond, as you mentioned, 3 for 12 for 6 points. And look, he finished third in Defensive Player of the Year voting. And I know that it's a regular season award, but this guy has to be first team all defense for what he's done this year. And just in the playoffs, it just goes up to another level.
Well, there's no debate there, Kev. And, you know, Draymond is, like Steve Kerr said, he's the best defensive player he's been around. That's high praise because he was around Pippen and all those guys down in San Antonio. And he has a book in his mind about tendencies of the players that he guards. And he knew that Sengun wanted to get to the left, turn back right shoulder. There's guys that you can say are because they're so young, they're very easy to predict as to what they're going to do. And Draymond made him go to his secondary look. And that's hard to do when you're playing against a player that really had it rolling. And it was just beautiful shot contestment, no question, no fall. And just you walk away with a great win. A lot of great performances.
Yeah, let's talk about another one of those great performances because, of course, in addition to getting the stop, you need to get the rebound. And Jimmy Butler had the rebound of the game. And he told Draymond Green, if you get the stop, I'll get the rebound. And he came up with the biggest rebound of the night with 4 seconds left.
Well, there were a bunch of guys in there, and it creates a lot of traffic on the freeway. And when you can go in and get a traffic rebound at that size with a lot of bigger guys around the paint there, that just shows you grit, determination. And he went up, boy, with the sore back and everything. He went up and snatched that thing. And it just kind of typified his whole game. The second half was just phenomenal. 12 for 12 from the free throw line, creating so many shots for his teammates, big-time D, just poise. And best compliment I can give him is he's a stone-cold winner.
He is a stone-cold winner. Let's hear from Draymond Green talking about Jimmy Butler's presence and the commitment the ownership group made to Draymond and Steph and Steve Kerr.
Well, his presence, number one, is huge. You know, I've spoke about it over and over again, just the commitment that our ownership group and front office made to Jimmy. But not only to Jimmy, to Steph and I and Steve. You know, we've been here for many years and still feeling like we have a chance, but not quite there and need a little boost. And our ownership group made a two-year, $120 million commitment for us to get that boost. And what he's meant since he's been here. Like, tonight was great. He played through the injury. It was beautiful. But it's just his presence. What his presence does for this team is humongous. The first three quarters, he couldn't move. Not sure how he started moving in the fourth quarter. But first three quarters, he couldn't move. And yet, he never complained. He stuck with it. And I think when it was most important, when the time was right, everybody on our side looked to get him the ball. And when you get him the ball, he make great things happen for himself or for others. You know, it was huge. I think my favorite play was the last rebound. I looked up. I thought it was Kuminga out there flying. It was Jimmy. That was my favorite play of all of them that he made.
Kev, you can't say it much better than that. That's a four-time world champ and grateful to ownership. Feels great about his team. Boy, I tell you what, those guys sitting in that locker room after that game, boy, they had to have a good feeling. It was just, it takes you back to all the great championship teams. That was a big, big-time performance.
Yeah, it really, and look, I'm not saying that this is a signal for ring number five, but it really did have one of those vintage Warriors performances kind of feel to it. Jimmy Butler, 27 points in the game. You mentioned the 12 for 12 free throwing. And he had five free throws in the final minute of that game, including three when the game was tied with just under a minute to go. Dylan Brooks, I don't know what he was thinking on that play, Saint. Just like putting his hand on Jimmy's hip, it didn't feel super necessary for him to do that.
Well, I've shared many a night that this is an old coach you're talking to. That made absolutely zero sense. And he does many things on the floor that don't make much sense, that help you get beat. I'm very pleased when he makes a couple shots in the first quarter, because he thinks then that he can shoot with Steph Curry, and he keeps shooting and shooting and shooting. And that takes the ball out of Sengun and Green and all these other Thompson. That was just a foolish play. And then the ruckus that happened there, he provoked the whole thing. I don't have much good to say about him.
Yeah, well, Jimmy Butler didn't have much good to say about Dillon Brooks after the game either. He said point blank, "I don't like Dillon Brooks." It was a pretty declarative statement from him. And you touched on it. This second quarter was one to not quite remember. I looked at the play-by-play. I looked at the box score. It took 42 minutes to get through the second quarter. Three reviews, two skirmishes, and one near ejection.
Yeah. I love the way these guys are competing. It's great stuff. I sure wish, Kev, there was a way to quicken the process with the when the green light goes on. I wish we could really get that down to a time limit or whatever, because it's really impacting the game.
Yeah, I mean the reviews certainly took a while, but to me the last review, I do feel like the refs kind of did Draymond a solid. Look, the first technical didn't seem super well earned. Like, it looked like he was just trying to break up a little skirmish, if you will. But the second one, where they gave him the flagrant instead of the technical to keep him in the game, I thought that was that helped Golden State. I'll put it like that.
You know what? That's veteran officiating. That's what that is. They don't want to throw him out of the game. So they found a way to keep him out there. And probably he's had some run-ins with all three of those guys. But, they're out there to make this game flow. And they walk off the floor and you can't remember who the heck they ref the game. And like I said before, it was tough to rebound, tough to ref. And, Draymond, you look at his line and you say, well, he didn't do much. I don't know, 6-8 points, 7-8 rebounds, not that many assists. But I'll tell you, his defense was just a huge key to that win last night.
The Golden State Valkyries inaugural season is coming soon. Don't miss the Valkyries' first ever regular season home game when they take on the Los Angeles Sparks Friday, May 16th at Chase Center. Get your tickets now for this historic game at valkyries.com. KC and Marin, we see you on the line. We got to take a break, but we will get to you on the other side of this break. When we come back, hearing from KC and Marin, taking a look at some other Game 4 happenings and looking ahead to Game 5 right here on 95.7 The Game.
After some heated debate.
Are you suggesting coconuts migrate? Not at all. They could be carried. A swallow carrying a coconut?
The Warriors Roundtable is back on 95.7 The Game.
Back here on Warriors Roundtable for 95.7 The Game. Dub Nation, learn more about becoming a Warriors season ticket holder. Secure seats for all Warriors home games for playoffs and next season. Plus, perks like Warriors shop discounts, priority presale access to Chase Center events, and more. Call 888-GSW-HOOP or visit warriors.com to learn more. All right, let's hit up the phone lines, 888-957-9570. Let's first head out to KC in Marin. KC, what's going on?
Hey, gentlemen. Good evening, Gary. It's an honor to talk to you. You've been a big part of my sports life, either as coach, GM, or talking about the Warriors. So it's an honor.
Thank you, pal. Casey, you made my night.
Hey, cheers. I want to talk about what a fairy tale this franchise is, in my opinion. Having had lived through, and Gary may not attest to this, but having lived through the Cohan and Robert Rowell Warriors, to never think that they would achieve anything as a team and would never sniff any success, to have them have the success that they've had, it's a dream that I could never dream about as a Warriors fan. It's amazing that it's still continuing. It's amazing that we have this this icon of a name that's lived forever within NBA, Steph and Clay and Draymond, and it's crazy. So I'm enjoying this run. This pickup of Jimmy was amazing. What a pickup by Mike Dunleavy, who doesn't get enough praise. But this franchise is just amazing. I never thought it would happen, and keep it going. Keep it going. Boys, have a good night, and have a great night.
Well, Casey, great breakdown, and you're spot on about Mike Dunleavy Jr. I had the privilege of drafting him, and you knew that he had a really, really high basketball IQ. I coached his dad with Nelly in Milwaukee. And a lot of times, the Suns are around the game so much, a lot rubs off. And why did he make the deal? He made the deal because he played with Jimmy for a whole year in Chicago. So contrary to all the stuff that was out there about the contracts and all that kind of thing, Mike knew him personally really well, and he competed with him. And then Mike goes to talk to Joe Lacob, and this ownership group just has a complete history of stepping up when needed. When a deal needs to be made, they get it done. And, you know, they can sit back right now and just say, wow, this is great. Because this feels like, you know, the beginning of the year was a struggle. And now you feel like, yeah, you know, you respect all these teams. But if you're really, really on top of your game, you're going to have a shot to win any night.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Casey. Really appreciate the call. Let's keep it moving because we got Jose in Vallejo who wants to talk a little bit about Dylan Brooks in this series. What's up, Jose?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Gary, it's an honor to talk to you. Yeah. So my take on Dylan Brooks, I loved how he thought he could get under the Warriors' skins, like all of our skins, and think he could just talk some smack, and then think he could just get his way. One thing I would say, I was listening to the Morning Roast today, and they were saying who should the ball go to. I definitely agree with Potts, totally, had a great game, but somebody that you should think about, Kerr, because not only did he do the hack at Adams, but he also benched Moody to put in Buddy Hield, and Buddy just came in clutch and got us those buckets. Like, that takes a lot, you know, and Kerr, like, we all put his faith in Curry, man. He's done it for us, and, man, Curry knows how to do it, and we're going to win another one this year.
Hey, Hoes, you really know what the heck you're talking about. I'm impressed, and Kev knows that I'm nominated myself for the president of Steve Kerr Fan Club, and I've talked about who the best coaches are in the league, and last night was a great night to watch a game and study the strategy. Just what you said. Who you're starting. That was a big change, starting Hield. How about Davis getting in the game, late game? And the intelligence of putting Looney in there because you knew he'd fall correctly against Adams. There were so many subtle things in your note about Brooks. Brooks was trying to get under Steph's skin. You're not doing that. I mean, he just kind of looks at him and says, what are you, crazy? So just... as I said in the beginning, I love the player performances, and I love the coaching. It was great.
Jose, thank you for the call. And Gary, if you're the president of the Steve Kerr Fan Club, I would like to be your first lieutenant because, I mean, this guy just does incredible work year in, year out with this organization. And yes, I understand who this is coming from. I work for the Golden State Warriors. I work for the Santa Cruz Warriors. I'm a team, not a team. I'm an independent contractor, so not necessarily a team employee, but you get the drift. And I know it sounds hollow coming from me, but this guy's a hell of a coach. Like, four NBA championships, and this is all I know. I was a manager in college. I know I don't know nearly enough, even though I was around the game for 4 years in the locker room, listening to coaches draw up game plans and all that stuff. I know I can't coach, and I think it's a little, I'm not sure what the right word is, a little crazy that there is a large, maybe I'm just online too much, a large, some sort of chunk of fans online who think they can coach better than Steve Kerr, who are giving him like rotation suggestions and stuff. I think Steve, even if he doesn't pitch a perfect game, which no coach does, I think he's done all right.
Yeah. You know what? You could join my club, and I don't even know how to go online, so I don't worry about that stuff. And then the next thing is, I was thinking about this week. And we talk about, you know, Bill Walsh and Bochy and La Russa, and, you know, Nelly didn't have any championships, but he had a great run here. And you can throw in some more names, Seifert. Boy, we've over the last, and I've been here about 30-something years, 36 years, we've had phenomenal coaches. And Steve is right there up with them. And he has that look on his face, complete control. He game plans just beautifully. He knows when's the substitute and what play action to run. Like he and Steph, there was no panic from Steph that he wasn't getting a lot of clean looks. They gave so much emphasis to him. If he was near another player, they were going to double him as soon as they could. That's why Podzimski and Post and Heald had good looks, because they were late on rotations to get to those guys. And that's the impact of having a superstar in Steph Curry.
Yeah. Now, I do have a coaching question for you, Saint. And so the final play of the game, Warriors deciding to not foul up three. And normally I would say foul. But as I was listening, I was helping out the radio crew last night, Tim and Tom, Tim Roy, Tom Tolbert did a great job on the broadcast as always. But Tom was saying, as Butler was taking the second free throw, I'm not sure I would foul here because then they can miss the second free throw and Steven Adams could get an offensive rebound right at the basket. And normally that's something I wouldn't think about, but considering all the rebounding success that Steven Adams has had and how big of a rebounding edge Houston has had in the series, that did make me think twice. What was going through your mind on that foul or don't foul up three with respect to last night's game? Not in general, but with respect to last night's game.
Hey, I respect Tommy's point. I would have had an idea whose hands would have been on the ball, and that was Van Fleet. So I would have had somebody over there. Maybe it was Butler. But to give him a clear path to go up the sideline, I almost thought they were just chasing him, that they couldn't catch him. And I do think they wanted to fall. Tommy's point's well taken, but I think they were going to fall. I don't know what statements were made today, but that's in my coaching book 101. I would have definitely fouled the guy.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk a little bit about Buddy Hield, because that's what Jose and Vallejo mentioned quickly, the decision to put Buddy Hield back in instead of Moses Moody. And he didn't have a great Houston part of the series, but his two games in Golden State at Chase Center in this series have been really good, and it led to his first playoff start Monday. And he, even though his shot wasn't going early, Saint, he set the tone defensively with those two strips of Jalen Green, and it led to this quote. I was listening to Grandy and Giddings, Evan Giddings, on the wrap-up show on the way back last night. They do a great job with that post-game show. And I think it was Grandy who brought up the quote that Steve Kerr said in the locker room to the guys after the game. I'm about to say something that nobody has ever said in basketball before. Buddy Hield, you set the tone defensively tonight. But he really did.
You know what's great, though, about Steve? He lets these guys be themselves. And I'm loving the comments that Butler's making about Hield. They're hysterical. They just a smile every day in the locker room. You need some guys like that, just kind of doing their thing. And, you know, I said this about him since he came aboard. He can shoot you in or he can shoot you out. And you have to know when to go to him and when to take him out of the game. He's been an extremely streaky shooter. But, I just have nothing but praise for his effort, and you noted his defense. He's locked into the game plan. Good for him.
Yeah, no, really good for him. And he hit one of the biggest shots of the game to give them the one-point lead in the final 3 minutes. Again, if you want to hit us up, 888-957-9570. Let's go out to Rich in Daly City. What's going on, Rich?
Hey, what's up, guys? Enjoy your work. Great job. I was just wondering, you know, it's never asked, but You have Jonathan Kuminga and to a lesser extent Wiseman in the past that are probably AAU products through and through. I was just wondering, does coaching, either in-season or off-season, do they go over any, like, do they teach these guys what, like, what are the things that Kerr is looking for on the defensive end?
Yeah.
What is it that can instincts be taught, or is it a case where, you know, it seems like these guys are pretty young, that they would, they need to be told what Kerr is looking for to give them PT? And so I'm just curious.
Yeah, you're, that's a great point. And yes, it's much more in depth than my days. You know, I was a Massachusetts guy, and a lot of times I'd go back to the Cape for well over a month. We did have a summer league, but now they, you know, they have these guys coming in all the time that they're willing to work. That's the first thing, and willing to get to learn and get better. And for me, the video stuff is just unbelievable. So to your point, they can break down all of, say, Kuminga's defense on the ball. They can have everything about him weak side low, which is the side opposite the ball, say underneath the basket. And how, like you just pointed out, instincts. How quickly do you rotate from weak to strong to stop the penetration of the offensive player? They can go into all of this stuff, your defense and pick and roll, every situation. And that's what good staffs do. Because the salary cap is so restrictive nowadays, you can't get down on yourself if you don't draft the next great player. That's what player development is. You have to spend a lot of time. It takes a player that wants to get better, that has that pride, and then you have a quality staff to put the work in with them and help them have a positive experience.
But we appreciate the call, Rich. Great question. Let's head out to what many people call the best city in the Bay Area, if not the world. San Jose, because that's where Jim is, and that's where I am as well. Jim, what's going on?
Yeah, maybe I am in the best city. I didn't know it, but I guess so. Gary, you're fantastic. Over the years, just you've always put so much fun and joy in the game. The game, not this past game, but the game where Butler was missing, you know, they won. The Warriors won, and yet they couldn't, all season, they couldn't win a game if they didn't have him. And they didn't even have Wiggins because he got traded, so there was no way they were going to win. So I didn't even turn the TV on. How did they do it? I just got to know how they did it.
Well, it doesn't hurt to have Steph Curry having a quality game. And then, you know, you got these guys, you know, coaches define roles. And then within the locker room, the veteran winning players like a Steph, like a Draymond, like a Butler, they talk to Pozinski, Moody, Post, and tell them, talk to them about their role. And you go to your strengths and you stay the heck away from your weaknesses. So that would mean that, you know, they don't want Looney out there shooting 15 threes a game, for example. And you know what you're being asked to do to help the team win. That was a gutty effort because you know, Houston gave them all they got. And I've just, these last two games, I know we're getting the split down there, but these last two games at home, boy, this is why you love the game. I mean, I'm really excited. I can't wait for tomorrow.
These playoffs and this series in particular has just been so fun to watch, and it's more fun to watch if you have the blue and yellow persuasion going as opposed to red and white. But, you know, Jim, we probably should talk a little more about the Game 3 win just because, Game 4 was so intense, but you go back 48 hours, I mean, Stephen Curry, but without his Robin, Batman need to be Batman. He got a little help from Alfred, or as Jimmy Butler calls Buddy Hield, the Joker. Buddy was great. And GP2 was incredible. I mean, there might not be another player in the NBA that could play as well with him. I mean, aside from Draymond Green, aside from Klay Thompson, then Gary Payton II.
Well, and you know, last night we talked about Podzimski having such a great game. Hield another one, Post. But that game, it was all about Hield and Payton. And you know, you say to yourself, well, You know, how come Payton didn't play huge minutes last night? And as coaches, you're looking for combinations on the floor. You know, have I got enough defense out there to pressure a guy like Green to not let him get going? Have I got rebounding covered? Have I got the shooters on the floor? So you're always looking at combinations. And I can see the respect the players have for my old pal, Terry Stotts, one of the best guys in the NBA. I've known him for 40 years. And in Stackhouse, it's who he was as a player. You talk about being physical and tough and determined. And I watched him and Draymond dapping each other. And it's great. I mean, it just gets you excited. It's just great to see.
Yeah, it's so great to see. So we talked about GP2, what he did on Saturday night. We got to talk a little bit about Brandon Pajemski because his confidence is soaring right now. I want to first hear from Brandon Pajemski and then get your thoughts. This is what Brandon had to say after the game last night with the talking with NBC Sports Bay Area, asked about where his confidence comes from.
I think it's the work, and I know I'm built for this. You know, good players in this league, they want the moment, and they don't back away from it. Some two threes I missed at the end, I'm going to take those every time. I'm built for this moment. I know what I put into this when nobody's watching. And that's how you build confidence. You build evidence. You got a lot of reps to prove it. And so just by that, why doubt yourself?
Well, Kev, about a month ago, you helped me with the clock. He was out. He was injured.
Yeah.
He comes
back. A couple months back.
Yeah. He comes back and plays like three or four, maybe his best games the whole year. Man, I'm scratching my head because, you know, with a pretty significant injury, you're saying he's not out on the floor much. He gets a little rust. But I don't know what happened. He flipped a switch. Like I said, he's a great guy from Wisconsin. Maybe he had one of those Usinger's bratwurst. And, you know, off he goes. And you know, he's young. He's had some up and downs. But, boy, these playoffs, he just stands out. And I'm going to share again that Ime Udoka is one of the guys that says, I'm going to take away, it's a little like Belichick, I'm going to take away your two or three best players. And I'm going to make those other guys beat me. Well, they did a great job on Steph last night. I just compliment them. But who had time to line up the seams? And, you know, he made some drives and finishes, took a charge. But those darn threes, I mean, it's just fantastic. And that's the work we were talking about that guys put in the offseason to build that confidence, to believe in themselves. Don't look back at the last one you missed. Keep going forward and believing you're going to knock the next one in. And he's getting praise from all the fans, all the players, all the coaches.
Jim, thank you. We talked with Jim already. See, I am trying to read. We're getting a lot of calls here. And so we want to head out to Shane in San Jose. Granny, thanks for keeping me honest here. Shane, what is going on?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. Excited to be on. But I just generally wanted to give some shout-outs. Coming into this series, I was a little scared of our, you know, role players stepping up and doing the things that they should do. But, man, they have been stepping up. Like you guys were just saying, in Game 3, GP2 and Buddy Hield just gave amazing minutes. Let's give a shout-out to Post for giving us some good bench
12
points.
12 rebounds.
Yeah, exactly. We needed him on the boards, and he came in clutch. And Buddy Hield, man, Buddy Hield the last two games has been killer. And it's like you guys are saying, he'll shoot you in or he'll shoot you out. And sometimes, like that last three that he made, that was a giant shot, I was scared. Literally, he took that shot, and I was like, oh, God. And then it went in, and I'm like, Buddy, let's go. So shout out to the role players for stepping up. And
I love that. That's great. And you know what? There were probably a whole lot of people on the couches and chairs yelling, oh, no. Yeah, great shot. We love you. And you know what? That's what happens. The role players play better at home. History tells you. And he stepped up in a big-time way in Post. I'm still amazed at this guy. You know, Kev, coaches will tell you this till the paint dries on the walls. If a guy can shoot, you're going to find a way to get him out there. Now, can he jump? No. Can he run? Not too well. Can he move laterally? No, not too well. But he knocks in these threes, and my gosh, that release is so beautiful and quick, and that changes your team when you've got a big that can pick and pop like that.
I'll tell you what else Quinton has. While he might not have the lateral quickness to stay in front of guys, and yes, Alperen Şengün was having his way with him, he's got a lot of heart. I mean,
he does. Good point. Very good point.
So the 12 rebound performance in game three, I thought was a testament to that. But how about last night trying to dunk on Steven Adams?
Oh, yeah, I love that.
I mean, and then just getting the crowd into it. Like, he's a fiery, fiery dude. When you think about, you know, stretch bigs who just are out there to space the floor, you don't necessarily, you know, think that and fiery competitor in the same sentence. But that's what Quinton Post is.
I love it. Hey. Anytime anybody starts praising a Boston College Eagle, I'm with them. That's great.
There you go. Absolutely. Quinton Post has been tremendous. Well, Wu-Tang Forever, the final chamber with Run the Jewels, is coming to Chase Center on June 24th. Get your tickets now at chasecenter.com. And as a reminder, as always, Wu-Tang is for the children. We are going to take one more break. We still have some time. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. Again, that number is 888-957-9570. And we're going to start to look ahead to Game 5. Can the Dubs close this thing out on the road tomorrow night, get themselves some extra rest? We'll find out tomorrow, but we'll talk about it on the other side of this break.
Now back to the Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game.
Let's take a look at our upcoming broadcast presented by Ticketmaster. Tomorrow, it's Game 5 in Houston, 4 p.m. on the air with Tim Roy and Tom Tolbert, tipping off at 4:30. You can catch all the action right here on 95.7 The Game. And after that, we don't know. Hopefully not Friday night, because that's when Game 6 would be if the Warriors were to lose tomorrow night. And look, I do think Houston has the upper hand for a Game 5. They're just going to be a ton more desperate. This team is really, really good. They almost won two games at Chase Center. Obviously, you like your chances if you're Golden State, but Houston... they're going to make it tough. And so it's going to be the hardest game to win. They say closeout games, Saint, are the hardest to win for a reason. And you know Houston is not backing down. They're not going to back down at all tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, great statement, especially on the road. And we saw tonight, for example, Milwaukee, just an abomination at the end of the game. They got eliminated, and they should have won the game. And you're right with that, Kevin. You know, one of the keys is Green. And I, for the life of me, I don't have a handle on him yet. What is this, his third year? Second?
This is Jalen Green's fourth year in the NBA.
You're kidding me.
Draft class
well,
is Jonathan
you know,
Kuminga.
This is, Kev, this is hard to coach. He is so inconsistent and emotional. And I've watched big games. And he's sitting on the bench. And he is, you know, if he's not your top guy, him and Şengün, and you don't know what you're going to get from him. The game, the big game that he had, they won. And I got to have a feeling that he's going to play well tomorrow at home. And it's going to be really interesting. The other two things that you've made a big point on. Study the free throw shooting and the three-point shooting. And that tells you a lot. I mean, they are poor at the free throw line. And the Warriors with Jimmy are terrific. And obviously you're going to make more threes because they don't have many three-point threats. And then your execution late game. The last 4 minutes of the game last night, you'd have to get the whiteboard out and a nice dry eraser and show me what the heck they were trying to do. it puzzles me. I mean, I'm happy for the Warriors, but I'm looking and I'm saying, what are we trying to get done here? The only thing that made sense to me is when they tried to go to Şengün there on the nail, or what they call the nail, which is right at the free throw line. Other than that, I don't have a clue.
Yeah, there are a couple things you said there, Saint, that I want to touch on. First, with respect to Jalen Green, and I understand that maybe I do have some Jalen Green bias, sentimentality-wise. Like RC Davis and I broadcast his game alongside Tim Roy at Stephen Curry's Under Armour SC30 camp.
Really?
In 2018. That also featured Anthony Edwards and James Wiseman, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, by the way. There was like a lot of dudes who went on to play in the NBA. So I saw
Kevin,
Jalen
is
Green
that
there.
The night that RC picked up the tab?
I don't remember that night.
Oh, okay.
Has RC ever picked up the tab, say?
Well, you know, yeah, I think he has, but, you know, maybe not consistently. You got to hit old Timmy up from Wethersfield, Connecticut.
Exactly. But so, like, I saw Jalen when he was in high school. He was one of the most consequential people in G League history by becoming the first person to sign with G League Ignite. So, like, that kind of stuff, as a 13-year employee of the G League, like, I really like him for that kind of stuff.
Okay.
He's been awesome for our league, the G League, in that way. And I really like him. But he does need to learn how to win in the playoffs. He's going to grow out of this. This is his first playoffs. He's still, like, 22 years old. But he's not 22. In a spot where he can hit big shots in the playoffs yet. And I say that because, all right, yeah, you could look at his game two where he had 38. But honestly, relatively speaking, with respect to those other games where they lost, like, game two was pretty easy for Houston. They led the whole game. Jimmy Butler was hurt. He didn't play the last, you know, three-plus quarters. They didn't really have a lot of game pressure. Jalen Green has not developed that, I don't want to say clutch gene, but he hasn't developed that muscle yet where he's able to hit shots under that kind of game duress. My Jalen Green theory, if they're up early, and this is why I think it's important for the Warriors to get off to a really good start tomorrow on the road, because if Houston gets up early, this is a Rockets team that looks really good when they're playing from ahead, and Jalen Green makes is sense. One big reason why. If you get on them early and you have a 10-point lead going into the second quarter, obviously 10-point lead isn't much, but if you can sow a little doubt in their minds that this might be their last game of the season, I think that's something you could really work with if you're Golden State.
I think the emotions are really wavering with young players in the playoffs. So I agree with you 200%.
So Ime Udoka, as we take a look at the Rockets side of things, after the game said he was non-committal about using the same starting lineup that he's used for game five. Do you think they move Jalen Green out of the starting lineup?
Nah, I don't think so. And I think he's smart keeping the cards tight to his chest. I think he'll go with them. And I don't know if there's, you know, I'm a Jabari Smith guy. I think that guy's got an upside. I know he missed a lot of time this year.
He's
I thought
good.
Thompson played well last night. You know, we all talk about his defense on Steph. He's got a phenomenal Euro step. He's really good going to the basket.
Yeah.
And I don't have a good handle on the other guy. What's his name? Eason?
Tari Eason.
Yeah, I don't have a good handle on him. But and you see Sengun, so you say to yourself, well, my gosh, we've got a big front line of young guys. We got this guy in the backcourt. They got a lot of pieces for the future. But you and I said it in the show before this series started, that the Warriors' veteran winning playoff experience will play big in this, and it has.
Yeah, it absolutely has to this point. Another question I'm curious about, we saw how well Sengun did when Draymond was off the floor, and obviously the hope is that Draymond doesn't get his fifth foul 4 minutes into the third quarter again, so you don't have to go long stretches with him out of the game. But if they are in a similar spot, or when Draymond is not on the floor and Sengun is out there, how would you try to go about better defending Alperen Sengun, or is there just no answer that the Warriors have, save for Draymond Green?
Well, I think we can call him Jokic's cousin or nephew or something.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's at that level, but he's big, a European guy. He's got a basketball IQ you can't debate. And you can't give him a consistent look. If somebody's having a problem guarding him, get another guy on there. If he gets involved in any pick and roll, how are you going to play it? What did the analytics say? What's been best for you? How are you going to play him on his favorite play? And that, I think, analytics would show that that play where he's getting the ball right there on the free throw line is his number one. Mm-hmm. And I talked about before, who is it? I mean, would you gamble and would you leave Thompson? I don't think you're going to leave Van Fleet. You're not going to leave Smith, and you're not going to leave Green. And I don't know if maybe Eason is out there. I don't know if he can make a three. But if you get desperate, you could go and put a hit on him.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to leave Thompson like out of any of those guys.
Yeah.
Just Fred VanVleet. They left Fred VanVleet way too many times.
Wow.
Last night he had 8 threes, and he's burned the Warriors before in the playoffs. We all remember 2019.
Wow.
So
yeah, that reminded me sitting with Greg Papa.
Yeah.
And I think Kalena was with us, and we're watching, and he was phenomenal. He was the court general up there on that championship team with Kawhi.
Yeah.
That guy there's got so much respect in the league. He's kind of like in the mold of Mike Conley.
Yeah.
Everybody respects him. And, boy, did he have a game. And, you know, when you got a guy like that, it's the same thing with Green. You can't wait for him to dribble to the three-point line. You got to meet him early, not let him have a lot of space and good vision to get shots up. And boy, he was on a roll. I to the point where he had that last shot, and I said, oh boy, are we going overtime?
Yeah. Hey, Raymond Ritter's favorite non-Warrior in the NBA, Fred VanVleet, because he went to Wichita State. That's
oh brother.
Yeah.
the shockers.
We got 3 minutes left here on Warriors Roundtable, and taking a quick look around the NBA playoffs, I needed to get your perspective on what happened in the second half of Game 4 between Minnesota and L.A.
Yeah.
Because the Lakers did not make a single substitution in the second half. And J.J. Redick, after the game, said they determined that they would do that in the locker room at halftime, that they were not going to make a sub in the second half. Look, I'm no coach. J.J. Redick knows a lot more about basketball than I do. I was curious to get your take on what happened there, especially since your son's on that coaching staff.
That's really easy to kick around with a cold one. Because of what happened with Luka and LeBron in the fourth quarter. When they looked at their guys, when you looked at Hayes and Vincent and I'm losing the names of the other two guys, they hadn't gotten any production at all. And they just felt like, hey, and Kev, you know this, you were in a lot of huddles.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, anybody tired? Anybody need a sub? Yeah. How many guys in an NBA playoff game are going to look up at the coach and say, oh, my God, I'm exhausted or I'm emotionally spent. I need a break.
Yeah, you're right.
Can you see doing that and you're sitting next to LeBron James? So that went on the whole second half. And sure, you open yourself up to conjecture. But, you know, they thought that that would work. And, hey, I'll say this. They were up, what, 9 or 10 going into the fourth?
Yep.
Minnesota makes a run, but then they got it back up to 5 or whatever. And I believe this, that foul that they called did not call when McDaniel tripped Luka up by midcourt.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That to me was as big as the 3-point attempt by Hardaway Jr. in the Knick game.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. I mean, because usually that gets called. That just normally gets called, and that's a tough way for the Lakers to lose that one. I mean, the series not over yet. If there's any team that's capable of winning 3 straight, the Warriors are familiar with LeBron coming back from a 3-1 deficit. So we'll see what they could do there. And I do think if you're the Warriors, you want you want that to be a 7-game series, and B, you want the Lakers to come out on top, because I think that the Timberwolves
I would agree
give
with
them.
That.
Bigger problems. All right, that'll do it for us tonight, folks. Not sure when our next show is yet because it depends on the Warriors' future schedule, but a big thank you to Mark Grandy behind the glass holding things down for us. Big thank you to R.C. Davis and Marika Kleto on the Warriors' side of things. For the saintly one, I'm Kevin Dana saying sayonara. We will talk to you sometime in the near future right here on 95.7 The Game.
Thank you for joining the Warriors Roundtable on 95.7 The Game.
Step left wing 3. 58-41, Darvin Ham. crowd says, I want to take a timeout because this one is over.
For tickets, call 888-GSW-HOOP.
Well, you have to know these things when you're a king, you know.